You are listening to
TalkLine Network Radio, America's longest-running Jewish broadcast network, the voice of the Jewish community.
What are we gonna do with our children? What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
Good evening and welcome back to Mask's weekly radio show on Family Matters. Mask, mothers and fathers aligned, saving kids of all ages and all stages for all mental health struggles. If you know somebody that needs a referral for a therapist, an inpatient or outpatient program, please give us a call at 718-758-0400. I'll repeat the number. You may want to jot it down for yourself, a loved one, a neighbor, or someone you usually would sit next to in shul. Our number again is 718-758-0400. Remember that all calls are kept strictly confidential. We offer parent Zoom support groups. We have Sunday night, Yeshaya Krauss facilitates, and it is for blended families, second marriages bringing up each other's children. Monday night, Dr. Debbie Ackerman. Tuesday night, Dr. Shmuel Brachfeld. Wednesday night, Rabbi Dr. Ben-Zion Twersky. Wednesday night in person in the Five Towns, Cheryl Friedman. And the first Tuesday of the month in person is Dr. Trish Atiya. If you or someone you know is interested in joining on these support groups by Zoom or in person, call us at 718-758-0400. So tonight I have a dear friend, a colleague, somebody that is often on our show, and that is Lee Yaffe, who's the founder and the director of the organization called The Long Short Road. And they're dedicated to fostering resilience through suicide prevention and mental wellness education. I'm really happy to have you on again. Thank you, Lee, for joining me tonight. How are you?
I'm good, Ruchama. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on again. It's always such a pleasure.
And not only how are you, but how is the new baby, Mazel Tov?
Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem. She's great. And she, you know, she, everywhere I go and everywhere I teach, she kind of, you know, comes along with me. So I kind of say she's like my second, she's like on my on-hand second educator, you know?
Right, and now we need her to just be nice and relaxed and quiet for our radio show.
Exactly.
So have a lot of nachas.
So Lee,
let's talk about the name of your organization, The Long Short Road. Can you explain how you got that name for my listeners, please?
Sure. So The Long Short Road is actually a concept that comes from Tanya, from the Alter Rebbe's Tanya. And in it's actually the first, it's like the introduction page to Tanya that you, that we learn on Yotes Kislev when we start the cycle from the beginning. The Alter Rebbe explains that there's two avenues to reaching connection with Hashem. One is the short, long way, which is you try to take shortcuts and you try to look for quick fixes and you try to, you know, do the work without doing the work. But inevitably, those always lead to dead ends, or you just have to go back and try again. And then the second avenue is the long, short road, which is, you know, that on the onset, putting in the energy that's needed to put in to have a relationship with Hashem, it's an avodah and it takes a lot of time and it's a long road, but it's taking, having that mindset of, we know that the road is long, but there is reward in taking the long road and not trying to take shortcuts. And we apply that to mental health because it's really true. There are no shortcuts to being a mentally well and strong and whole person. It takes effort. It takes commitment. You have to wake up every day and put in the effort the same way you did the day before. So it is a long road, but I think there's beauty in recognizing that we're all on this road together, and that healing is possible, even if the road is long.
Thank you. And Lee, you're doing this for many years. We have you go into schools and do suicide prevention programs. Tell my listeners how, in the last 5 years, how things have changed with young adults that you see in the schools, please.
Sure. Well, in terms of, you know, the suicide rate, unfortunately, among teenagers is the highest, it's the second highest leading cause of death in teenagers ages 12 to, actually, it's not even teenagers anymore, it's young adults. It's in their 20s also, ages 12 to 25. And I think, you know, I've been doing this for a very long time, but what I've seen in the last 5 years is, one, COVID did a huge number on people. We're still seeing the ramifications of the isolation and the disconnect from community. Community is healing, and we didn't have that. And teenagers growing up in the last 5 years didn't have that in a very formative time in their lives. That's the first thing. The second thing is the impact of social media on young people. I mean, without thinking about all the other contributing factors of suicide, right? Like trauma and neglect and the existence of a mental health challenge. Just the isolation that we've experienced as a society, plus, you know, social media is distorting young people's reality, and that's also the way they communicate and how they interact with one another. So it's a double-edged sword, because on one hand it contributes to their togetherness, on the other hand it contributes to their isolation and their lack of connection and real bonding with people. So the rate is, you know, rising, but I will tell you one positive thing I have seen, Ruchama. I think people are so much more willing to talk about this than they were when I got started. Just even in the last 5 years, we weren't having conversations about suicide in the way that I've had them in the last 2 years. And that's very empowering for me to see that our community is, you know, the from world is speaking up about this and is not afraid of this anymore. That's huge. It's amazing.
It really is huge. Both. We do programs for schools and community programs with Lee. We just did one by Rachel's place.
Which was beautiful. I think I told you this, Ruchama, privately, that like the girls could have taught it. That they were so they were, it was so impactful to hear how they were relating to the material and like connecting to it and understanding it and willing to apply it to their lives to be able to support their friends. It was very empowering for me to see.
Yeah, thank you. They let me know right after how much they got from your training, and always love to have you come to keep them educated and know about this topic of suicide prevention. Like you said, since COVID, the young adults are all struggling, not all, let me correct myself, many young adults are struggling with suicide thoughts. And they say it's so helpful when we bring programs like what you do to them, how they can speak openly about it. It's comforting to know that there are those people, organization, therapist available so that kids, young adults can speak to them. So thank you.
Thank you.
Lee, let's talk about resilience. And the reason that I bring up resilience is because now that people, you know, are going to therapy, therapists are booked solid. Clinics are booked solid. I mean, people call all the time. They try calling therapists. They don't have an appointment for 3 months. There's a 6-month waiting list, which is a good thing that now people are going to therapy.
Sure,
if they're struggling. Where when I started Mass 26 years ago, the clinics were begging us to send referrals. And now we have to beg them to let in our clients that their book's solid. So, which means not only MASC, but many, many organizations have worked so hard towards stigma-free. And Baruch Hashem, sadly, but Baruch Hashem, people now feel more comfortable going to a therapist. But let's talk about how MASC does an intake. When a parent calls and says their 16-year-old, their 29-year-old, their 14-year-old, their 9-year-old, whatever age, we always go back to first to fourth grade. And they always ask, why are you looking back to first to fourth grade? Mm-hmm. And the reason is we like to go back to where the story began. Where did that pain begin?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that now you are doing a wonderful 6-week program, a virtual course. And I want to talk about how you, when you put out your information, the question was, how can I help my child thrive?
Mm-hmm.
And it's, and I know it's for 0 to 10-year-old, and parents will scratch their head and say, oi, so now I got to start going to a class from 0 to 10-year-olds. I want you to explain the benefit of why you're doing this class, please.
Sure. So in all of my years, in all of the hundreds of phone calls that I have received from parents like you, Ruhamav, you know, parents of ages, all different ages and different stages of life, I also always go back to their childhood because, you know, a person is shaped. Not, you know, I want to say this with a caveat that people are shaped by what happens to them in their formative years, but that change is possible and that history is not destiny. What happened to a person at first grade or second grade or third grade that was traumatic for them and left an emotional scar does not have to be the way they live forever, right? And that's part of resilience. That's, you know, if it wasn't possible, then we wouldn't be doing all of these programs, right? That being said, the course itself actually for parents is not only about how to help their children in the formative years thrive and become resilient no matter what. It actually is focusing on, for the first 3 weeks of the course, our focus is on the parents' lived experience, their experience, what happened to them, what stories are they still carrying, which generational wounds are they not wanting to pass on to their children, and then how do we stop those generational wounds from going to the next generation, to their children and their grandchildren. And I know that might sound a little bit airy-fairy, but in very practical, real, easy-to-use tools and skills that we're going to be developing together as a group, meaning there's tools that I'm empowering them, but we're going to be learning them together and doing them together. It's really about helping parents take agency over their own experiences and their own emotional regulation so that they can then empower their young children with the same skills. Because very often parents will say to me, well, I want my child to be emotionally regulated and resilient. I say, that's wonderful. But who are they learning it from? This learning starts at home. They're learning it from you. And they cannot learn from you something that you do not have, right? So it's really, it's a two-part process here. It's empowering the parents to have the tools and then teaching them how to instill those tools in their children, really to combat the very issues that I've been dealing with and that you have been dealing with at MASC for years. Depression, anxiety, suicidal ideation, addiction, we can really stop those things in their tracks by helping parents give those foundational skills to children at a young age, and not wait, God forbid, until there's emergency, and not wait, God forbid, until they're turning towards addictive tendencies. My hope is to be able to also offer this course eventually to parents of teenagers, but at the same time, I think parents of young children, you know, parents of teenagers are maybe dealing with different issues. So our goal for now is to help empower parents who are dealing with a much younger age group so that they can give them these foundational tools before they hit puberty, before they start becoming less risk averse, before they start engaging in behaviors that might be potentially dangerous. How do we offset that from the start?
Thank you. Let's talk. Would you share a few techniques that'll be taught and what the research is behind those techniques, please?
Sure. So we're going to be utilizing learning and understanding and working with the brain science behind development and how relationships shape and impact the brain and the mind. That is research that comes from Dr. Daniel Siegel. We'll be utilizing mindfulness and breathwork techniques. We will be utilizing expressive writing, which there is extensive research coming from Dr. James Pennebaker, from Dr. Jordan Peterson, again from Dr. Daniel Siegel, from Natalie Goldberg, that point to the use of expressive writing in healing trauma and in learning to take agency over your story. There's a quote by Brené Brown, who's another social worker and researcher. She says, this is the quote. We're born makers. We move what we know from our head into our heart through our hands. And there is so much research that shows that when you use your body in trauma healing, so how do you use your body? You're writing it down. You're getting your story out. But not only getting your story out, sharing it in a safe environment with other people, other like-minded parents. There's a lot of positive research, and I've seen it firsthand, the positive impact that sharing and letting go of difficult stories can have on a person's well-being and on their ability to take agency to make changes. So it's not just about, in theory, you know, these are all nice ideas in theory. We're going to be practicing them together as a group, week by week, and empowering them to really add these tools into their day-to-day life, because the work doesn't end after 6 weeks. They're going to be doing, God willing, the work of parenting for as long as their children, as long as they're alive, right? So it's giving them lifelong foundational skills that they can use at any time, in any stage, with any age child.
You gave them mindfulness as an example. So I'm just wondering, not everybody may know about mindfulness.
Sure.
Therapy. So do you want to give them a little bit information, exactly. Background
sure.
on that?
Please. Absolutely. So mindfulness and mindfulness-based meditation or breathing, this is a technique that was developed by Dr. Jon Kabat-Zinn at, I believe it was Johns Hopkins in the 1970s or late 1980s. The idea behind mindfulness is using the wisdom of your body and your breath, learning how to breathe the right way, and learning how to experience what's happening to you in the moment. And, you know, most of us live our lives either, you know, our minds are in the past or we're in the future. We're very rarely present. And so when we learn how to breathe in a new way that helps us center ourselves and come to the present moment, a lot of what it means to be emotionally regulated and be, you know, just whole and present is about learning how to breathe and just kind of be in the moment and not try to get out of the moment because it's uncomfortable. So we're going to be doing different breathing techniques. We will also be utilizing cold exposure therapy. I know cold plunge is very popular right now. We're going to be doing a varied version of cold plunge as a way of teaching people how to regulate and breathe through a difficult experience. There will also be some art therapy experiences that we'll be adding in, but all of it will be rooted in helping people come to the present moment and be here, be now, so that they, again, can make rational, logical, healthy decisions for themselves, but also for their children.
You know, Lee, you're talking about 0 to 10, so you still have a good chance of, changing our own parenting styles.
Sure.
Let's talk about supporting emotional needs of teens and older children. Remember, teens, what should I say? They're a hard nut to crack once they're teenagers. I
It's
hope
a
no
whole.
teenagers are listening.
I mean, I'll tell you. So this is how I'll frame it for you. The Lubavitcher Rebbe spoke often about the power of youth and the power that teenagers have to change the world in positive ways that even adults don't have. So, the teenage years can be a very, very challenging time for the teens and for their parents and caretakers. It's not an easy ride for anyone. And anyone who remembers what it was like to being a teenager, it's not fun. It's not always pleasant. It can be very challenging. And at the same time, the brain and the body and the mind and relationships are all moldable, right? It's not like once you get to be a teenager, that's it. What you have in your, who you are is who you are, and you're static and stuck for life. There are, of course, obviously, things that parents can do to shape and change their relationship. These same skills that we're going to be teaching in this course can be applied to teenagers. It's just a different conversation because teenagers have a lot more agency and independence than young children do. They rely on their parents less. And they're also at a state biologically where they're supposed to be, so to speak, disconnecting from their parents and relying less on their parents and turning more towards their peer groups. So it's really about how do you help create that relationship with a teen when, so to speak, they're getting ready to leave the nest. But it is still possible. And I've seen it possible, and I've seen changes happening in parent styles and parent relationships with children, with adult children, with 30-year-old children, with 35-year-old children. It's definitely possible. But for and I've seen it. But for this particular course, we want to start them young, and then we'll also include the older groups later on, God willing.
Well, we always talk about prevention. So prevention is so important. Now that we all know what's going on out there in the world emotionally, mentally, so we have a chance at changing the w ways that we're used to responding and learn new tricks and
Absolutely.
responses. So
Absolutely.
this is a great time to join the group with Lee. Anyone that wants to reach Lee, please give us a call at 718-758-0400. And I'll make sure that Lee herself will get back to you. Again, 718-758-0400. Lee, I want to bring up, you went to Rachel's place, you go to BCA, you go to schools in Crown Heights, you go to schools out of town all over. Do you want to share what you're hearing from the girls themselves?
Sure.
That was a
Here's no. It's it was because I across the board, if the girls are struggling emotionally or religiously or not, across the board, what I hear from young women, from high school age girls today, is what they want is to be able to speak to their parents about the things that are scaring them or the things that they're struggling with, without judgment or I told you so's. They just What they want is to be heard and embraced. And I know as a, I mean, look, my children are young, but I know even as a mom of young children that when my children are hurting, I just want to fix it and get rid of it. And I think the message that I'm hearing from teens again and again, and it doesn't matter their background or where they're holding religiously or where they're holding with mental health, they just want their parents to hear them and hold them and not try to fix the problem, at least not right away. Like be with them in the discomfort and show them that you're not afraid of their big feelings. I think that's the big takeaway I'm getting.
So
Yeah.
I want to check some numbers with you. My reports say that 2 in 5 adults report persistent hopelessness and sadness, which is a 50% increase than in the last 10 years.
Yep, that's correct.
One in five high school students have seriously considered attempting suicide during the previous year, and one in 10 high school students actually attempt suicide, whether it's they were successful in their mind or not, we're not right. discussing, but they right. did attempt.
Yeah. Yeah, those numbers are accurate, and I really wish that they were not. You know, I think, you know, there's people ask me all the time, like, do you think that healing, you know, that healing is actually possible? I tell people from my own personal experiences and also from the lived experience of supporting hundreds of people, I really see that it's possible. And I also think that part of the reason, and this is anecdotal, I cannot tell you this based in hard research, but part of what I'm seeing with why, if you would ask me why I think these numbers are rising, it's because we're still, as a society as a whole, there is still so much stigma around the issues of mental health or mental challenges that we isolate and we cut ourselves off from community because we're worried about what the ramifications or the response will be. I spoke to a mother not long ago who had been carrying a very difficult challenge with her young child who was struggling with suicidal ideation for 6 years without telling anyone. I mean, that's gonna lead anyone to experience hopelessness. And I think in across the board, Jewish, not Jewish, religious, not religious, we still have the isolation and the isolation and the keeping it to ourselves is a huge contributor to the hopelessness that people are feeling. It's not the only thing, but it's definitely a big thing.
Absolutely. So what message do you want to leave my listeners with? You said that parents should be with their child. Describe again. So let's use it as a practice. Describe again what a parent needs to do when a child shares that they are struggling.
The first thing the parent should do is take a deep, cleansing, nourishing breath, even if it's only, right, just get airflow. The second thing they should do is if their child wants to be held or embraced, hug or embrace them and thank them for sharing. That's probably the best thing you can do for your child is thank them for having the courage to come to you because they could have not come to you. So it speaks volumes that they even tried to speak to you about it. And the third thing would be don't immediately jump to, well, how are we solving this and where are we going and who's going to help us? Listen to them. Give them the space to be able to talk and say, you know, this is what's going on before you get to a solution. And the last thing would be make sure that you're getting support for yourself. To navigate having a child who's struggling is very hard to do alone. And as I just mentioned, the hopelessness is very much rooted in isolation. So don't stay isolated, right? Seek help of your friends or of a professional. Join a support group, right? Something.
Thank you. Yeah. And yes, mask offers support groups for parents whose kids are struggling. So again, call MASC at 718-758-0400. Thank you, Lee. It's so wonderful always having you on, such important information to share. And thank you for always being there for the MASC families.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Ruchama.
Now I want to wish everyone a very good evening, a beautiful Shabbos, and always remember, hang in, hold on, and virtually still, hug tight. Tonight's show is in honor of all the Chayalim. Please consider to go online and donate at maskparents.org so we can continue with all the MASC programs. Thank you. Have a good night. And good Shabbos.
Please join Dr. Shelley Hirsch, Ari Fries, Dr. Yitzko Berg, and myself, Dr. Robert Wolf, at the new time of 9:30 p.m. Thursdays on 620 a.m. and 102.7 FM for our important and widely acclaimed show, The History of Jews in Israel. We present the facts related to the history of the Jewish state in Israel and knock down the lies and falsehoods related to the Jewish homeland. You can also now email us at blueandwhitefacts@gmail.com. That's blueandwhitefacts@gmail.com. Come listen to the truth.